All right, we're going to try this again now after a brief technical difficulty there. Let's try this again. Hopefully, if this is working properly, we're going to welcome to the program now Michael Westbay of JapaneseBaseball.com.
Hello.
Welcome to you.
Am I there?
Okay, give me 1 second here.
Okay.
I think I've got it.
Hello.
You're coming in a little bit low. But I think we'll be okay.
Okay. Okay.
But anyway, Michael's coming to us straight from Yokohama right now.
Yep. Yep.
Where it is Sunday evening over there. Looks like you're enjoying a good game there between the Bay Stars and the Dragons.
I was until this inning. The Dragons have turned it around, taking a 5-3 lead. Just now.
Just now.
Okay, so I saw as you were updating me on the text here, Fukudome got the go-ahead run there, singling in Tatsunami from second. So what's happened in the meantime?
Alex followed that with an RBI single. Was it to left or right?
I don't remember all of a sudden.
And Inoue is now up to bat with runners at first and third. So the Dragons aren't slowing down here.
All right, well, I guess my playing of the Bay Stars song there didn't quite work as I had hoped.
No, everything seemed to fall apart right about then.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That's what I've noticed playing the music here on the show. But anyway, we're going to keep this kind of loose here because obviously we've had a few technical problems here at the station. So, but this is a good experiment, and I hope since this seems like it's working, you'll definitely hopefully come on again when we have everything fully up and running here at the station. But I guess we wanted to talk a little bit about Japanese baseball a little bit in the context of what we've been seeing here in the United States from the MLB angle, because obviously I'm sure many of the listeners here are very familiar with MLB, and they've been hearing a little more through the MLB media about Japanese pro baseball with all of the different successful players that have come over to some of the teams over here. We were talking before the show, and one of the people we were talking about is actually someone that I wanted to mention because he's actually not getting a lot of press here in the U.S., or at least not as much as I think he potentially deserves. That being Tadahito Iguchi, who's been certainly a spark plug for the great run of the Chicago White Sox this season. And he's basically continuing some great play from his days as part of the Hawks in Japan.
Yeah, Iguchi was drafted in 96 or 97. As a shortstop, and he was supposed to be the Hawks shortstop for the next decade or so, but in 2001 he was converted to a second baseman, where he has really excelled, more so than while he was at short.
And certainly, although his offensive numbers might not be spectacular, they've certainly always been... he's consistently been a very good player, offensively speaking.
Yeah, he averaged about in the 250s for the first several years in Japan, and it was only the last couple of years that he got up over 300, batting 340 and 333 in 2003 and 2004, respectively. But until then, he was just pretty much an average hitter. So it's just in the last couple of years that he's really come around as a really good hitter, and I think the White Sox got him at a very good time. He's really starting to reach his peak right now.
Yeah, because he's definitely, he's been putting it up close to 300 hitting numbers here for the season so far. He's had some clutch hits, some big home runs for the White Sox, because certainly one of the hallmarks of the White Sox this season has been winning the close ones. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much been the difference in terms of how well they've been doing this season, and Iguchi certainly played a large role in that. And after the the jury is still out on this, but sort of the failed experiment of Kazuo Matsui in New York.
Yes.
He was the first infielder to come over, I guess, from Japan to the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we saw the pitching coming over first with Nomomania sort of starting an influx of some Japanese pitchers in the major leagues, and then mm-hmm. Ichiro sort of opened the door for the outfield, and then we saw Hideki Matsui come over and be quite successful for the Yankees. Kaz was the first infielder coming in, and so far it really hasn't worked out for him.
No, it hasn't.
So Iguchi's good play in Chicago is definitely showing that the infielders can play with the major leaguers as well. So I think the only position to this point that isn't represented is at the catcher position. I believe there is no one over yet, although I guess I'm hearing rumblings that is it the Hawks catcher,
yes, Jojima?
I know he's pretty much expressed interest either in staying with the Hawks or actually making the jump over to the major leagues here.
Right, that's
States.
What he said. He's either going to go to the majors next year or stay with Daiei. He hasn't expressed any interest in using his free agency status to go to any other Japanese team.
So we'll have to see in the off season whether or not he makes the move over here. The other person I wanted to touch base on, because it looks like we're coming up on potentially his retirement appearance, is Kazuhiro Sasaki, who
yes.
Major League fans should remember quite well. He was a big pitcher here, I think mostly for the Mariners.
Yes.
When he was here. But he now, when he first, before he first came over, which team was he playing for?
He was with Yokohama then, too. He was with Yokohama throughout his career here.
Okay, so he's always been a Bay Star for his career in Japan.
Well, actually, he was drafted as a Taiyo Whale. The Whales were renamed in 93, I believe, to the Yokohama Bay Stars.
Okay. I actually, just since you brought that up, that's actually a subject that I thought maybe to touch on just for a moment, because I know since I've only been covering MPB on the show here for mm-hmm. a couple of years, I think one of the aspects of the Japanese pro leagues that's something that's very different for American fans is this sort of corporate
sponsorship,
ownership of the teams. In many cases, the teams aren't necessarily named for the cities that they play in, but they're named for the whatever corporation actually is sponsoring the team or mm-hmm. basically owns the team. And I've noticed that leads to a little more of the name changes that we see. Like I know the first full season of MPB that I covered here on the show was last season, and that was uh-huh. a very unusual season because of the merger talk, the player strike, and eventually the two of the teams merging and then a new team being formed.
Right.
In the Rakuten Golden Eagles. But actually, in many cases, some of these teams actually may have only had their name for maybe 10 or 15 years at this point, and were mm-hmm. known by another name really not that long ago.
Right. Lotte is one of them. Lotte moved from Kawasaki to Chiba back in the early 1990s, before they became the Chibolote Marines, they were the Lote Orions. And before Daae bought the Hawks, they were the Nankai Hawks. Daae bought them and moved them to Fukuoka. And then, of course, SoftBank bought the Daae Hawks at the end of last season. So now they're the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. A lot of times the teams will keep the same character image soon after buying the teams, but then change them eventually. There's a long history of that sort of thing, where they keep the mascot for the first couple of years and then change it to help match the corporate image that they want to present.
Right. So this sort of thing going on is not as unusual as someone who's sort of unfamiliar with the game might think.
Right.
So now, but anyway, getting back to Sasaki now, it looks like it is going to be a go for his potential retirement appearance coming up in the next couple of days.
Today's Nikon Sports, Japanese daily sports newspaper, has stated that Ushijima Kantoku watched Sasaki throw yesterday and has pretty much given the approval to register him on August 9th with the top team and have him play at Sendai his final game, after which he will most likely retire.
So, and that'll bring an end to a great career. I was wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit about his, because obviously people are familiar with his work here in the major leagues, but may not have a sense for how he was performing for the Bay Stars and the Taiyo Whales before he actually came over here to the major leagues.
Yes, early in his career, his manager, Ejiri Kantoku, who later managed the Chibolote Marines after Bobby Valentine in 95, Ejiri was the creator of the double stopper role with, was it Fukumori? I think it was Fukumori, followed by Sasaki at Yokohama in the early 1990s. And the double stopper was kind of a new thing here in Japan then. And Sasaki, of course, got really all of the attention, being the premier stopper in Japan throughout the 1990s until he went over to Seattle as a free agent.
Okay, now, for the double stopper, I assume, are you referring to kind of a situation of almost having two closers where one would work the eighth inning and then one would work the ninth inning?
Exactly. That's exactly what he had done.
Okay. Because that brings up an interesting point is obviously, especially more recently here in MLB, obviously we think a lot about the closer as a pitcher, and I don't know how prevalent that kind of a role is in terms of Japanese baseball. I certainly see a few pitchers who definitely rack up the saves, which I would consider to be definitely closing pitchers, but is that as widespread in Japan as it is here, or are there other teams that really don't necessarily have a defined closing pitcher?
I think Chunichi divides their closer up between one of two people a great deal. That's just my own observation. They have two players with lot of saves. No one particular player with a lot of them. Let me quickly confirm that. Iwase is their premier closer. Okay. I guess they do have a premier closer. It just seems like another one of them gets a lot of saves. But yes, since the 90s, and especially Sasaki, pretty much defined the role of a closer. He was the closer of the 1990s. When Sasaki came in, the game was over. And that's pretty much how every team felt, even the Giants.
So seeing his retirement here is, I just wanted to get a sense for the meaning of his retirement coming up here, and what he meant in terms of pro baseball in Japan. So it certainly sounds like he's a sort of a defining player.
Yes.
In terms of the recent baseball history in Japan.
And that's another one of the reasons that they want to do it against the Giants, because it's kind of every player's dream to face the Giants for their start of their career and the end of their career, because this is going to be broadcast throughout the country. Of course, Sasaki is also from the Sendai area, so he'll be playing in front of a home crowd for himself. His mother, who is ailing, is reportedly going to be there, as she can't come down to Tokyo to watch him. The rest of his family. In the university that he went to, up in the Tohoku region, Sasaki was actually diagnosed with having back problems, and it was thought that he wouldn't be able to pitch, but what he did was he became the closer, and just throwing one inning was okay for him. It was essentially throwing more than one inning, he was going to put too much strain on his back at the time. And that's something that I read about him long ago, about his pre-professional career. So everything up in that northern region, which is where he's planning on playing his last game, has a great deal of significance to both Japanese professional baseball, the whole role of the closer, and especially to Sasaki personally.
Yeah, so that's so hopefully I'll report a little bit more on that next week, because it sounds like this game will probably happen on Tuesday. Is that the scheduled date?
Yes, the 9th. Tuesday, okay. Yes.
All right, so hopefully we'll be able to talk about that a little more next week on the show.
Also, one other thing. Against the Giants... Kiyohara plays for the Giants. Kiyohara is one of the kanji you know, so I'm sure that you know him.
Yes.
Sasaki and Kiyohara go way back. They've been really good friends all along, and Sasaki really likes facing Kiyohara. So I'm sure that the press in the coming days are going to start building up that rivalry between the two. And hopefully we'll be able to see the two face off there in Sasaki's final outing.
Now, I'm just trying to think. Did Sasaki primarily face off against Kiyohara while he's been playing for the for the Giants at this point?
Since he came over to the Giants, he has been. But, of course, Kiyohara started off his career in the Pacific League with the Lions, so that's something much more recent.
Okay. That's just why the rivalry didn't start as part of during Kiyohara's career with the Lions. That's,
right.
That's what I wanted to... I see. So, okay. So we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. Now, I wanted to, real quick, we've just got a couple more minutes left here, but one of the subjects that I really wanted to talk about was the upcoming World Baseball Classic.
Mm-hmm.
The major leagues here in the United States have been trying this season to put a little more focus on this international aspect, the various players that are playing in MLB right now and where they're coming from to kind of set up for this this tournament that's being planned for March of next year, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that a lot of the fans here don't know, it hasn't really been talked about very much, is the fact that while the owners in MPB have agreed to participate in the World Baseball Classic, the mm-hmm. actual players union in Japan has actually declined to participate at this point in that tournament.
Yes, the players have said that they are willing to play preliminary round in March, but would like the finals to be played sometime around, well, when the All-Star game would normally be played. They feel that that would help reduce the possibility of injury, and also it'll help build up to this World Baseball Classic, something that isn't being taken into account. You just go straight into this World Baseball Classic without any kind of build-up whatsoever, without even spring training for the most part. So the players are very much worried that this kind of setup is not only dangerous for the players with possible injuries coming from it, but also that it's really geared toward hyping Major League Baseball and taking away the fan base and the possible build-up to the Japanese as well as the other Asian nations' own professional leagues at the end of March, beginning of April.
I would assume the concern in terms of losing out on the spring training, obviously MLB's spring training would also be happening at about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that I think some of the players have mentioned this here, but certainly in terms of the loss of the spring training, that's something that's going to happen to all the players,
uh-huh.
I think. Or certainly as much to the MLB players as it would to anyone else, because the schedules are pretty close, I know, between Major League Baseball and MPB. You know, the seasons tend to start around the same time.
Yes, and in fact, Japanese start training a little bit earlier.
Right, so so basically, obviously, that's a major concern, and I'm not really sure. We've talked a little bit about what we'd like to see. It's certainly something that I know I've seen Bobby Valentine, when he's been interviewed, has sort of been a proponent of the same mm-hmm. thing. But getting into the idea that, you know, certainly I'm not sure if people here, more recent fans, appreciate it quite as much, how much of a team sport baseball really is.
Mm-hmm.
And the value of having this kind of international all-star competition, which is the way the tournament's designed to be set up, is basically each country would have their sort of all-star team put together to represent their country.
Right.
And then it would be sort of played a la the FIFA World Cup, mm-hmm. in that you'd have the various preliminary groups that would play a tournament, and then the winners of each of those groups would then go on to a finals tournament,
mm-hmm.
To determine the winner. But a lot of us have sort of been wishing for the idea of actually having a club championship.
Right, a real World Series.
Right, where we actually get to see the top team of each particular league from the countries actually face off against each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
now that's something that's actually going to be going on within Asia itself. Is that this season?
Right. The people here with Japanese professional baseball have gotten together with Korean baseball organization, Chinese Professional Baseball League in Taiwan, and the newly emerging Professional League in mainland China to set up an Asian series. And this Asian series is going to be taking place this November from the 10th for 4 days. It's essentially a round-robin tournament with a finals match being held on the fourth day. The thing is, all of the participants are getting to have a say in the matter. All of the participants are coming together to talk about how they want to put this on. So that's one thing that MLB did not do in planning this baseball classic, which is a major complaint from Japan, Korea, and many other nations.
In other words, this is the World Baseball Classic is pretty much been entirely set up by MLB.
Right.
And they're basically just saying who wants to come in and play with us. That's basically what they've been saying.
Exactly. In the case of the Asia series, it's got basically one major sponsor, Konami. And it's being called the Konami Cup Asia Series. So, really, it's Japan who is paying for it. It's going to be the fans coming into Japanese parks who are going to be, you know, assisting to pay for it. So, for the most part, Japan is paying for it, but all of the teams get to benefit. Okay? The MLB is trying to say that, well, we're paying for it, so we're going to be able to dictate how it all works. And Japan is not taking that approach with this Asia series to decide the champion of the four major Asian leagues.
Right. And now the there's definitely, I think, been more spotlight being put on some of the other leagues around Asia too, because much like we're seeing the Japanese baseball players come over to the major leagues, and we've also seen some of the players from the other Asian countries over here, but also by the same token, there's been a lot of participation of players from the other Asian nations on the MPB teams themselves.
Yes, there has. The Korean home run leader in 2003 came over to Chiba Lotte Marines last year, Lee. The Cebu Lions have a couple of fantastic Taiwanese pitchers on their pitching staff. And one thing that NPB has been proposing lately is extending the foreign player limit. Right now, each team can have four foreign players on the top team at a time. They can have an unlimited number on the first and second team altogether. But they've been considering expanding that to one extra Asian player. And this past weekend, when the various Asian countries met to discuss the Asia series, some of the other countries, particularly CPBL in Taiwan, went back kind of wondering if this is a good thing for Taiwan or not. They're starting to be concerned that maybe Japan is going to be encroaching on their players in a similar way that the major leagues is starting to encroach on Japanese players. So a lot of the foreigners say, hey, Japan, you should open up the foreign player limit. But now these other Asian countries are not so sure that that's best for them, for Japan to extend the foreign player limit, especially for Asians.
Right. They may see more of their best players ending up on the MPB teams.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to close it up here, but I really do appreciate you coming on here with us on the show this morning, and hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Yeah, it would be an honor. I'd be pleased to.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Michael Westbay, of JapaneseBaseball.com. That's definitely a site I recommend. I go there all the time to get my my pro baseball information about MPB. So it's definitely a great place for you to get information too if you're interested in following up on the MPB. But of course, you can also do that by listening each week here to the Radio One Half Show. I'll always try to keep you as fully updated as I can on the Japanese Pro Leagues. But we've got about 20 minutes left here before the Neo Tokyo Top 10.
Can I make a request?
Longer than I expected there, so I hope you enjoyed that. We've got time to play a few more songs here, and then we'll get to the Top 10, and we'll try to get you the full updates here after this next block, at least, of what the scores are in the games going on in Japan right now. So without further ado, I have queued up for you right now an idol singer going back a few years, one Ami Suzuki. She was definitely one of the proteges of the Japanese music producer Tetsuya Komuro. And when I was last down in New York City last weekend, I was able to pick up her album S.A., which features a number of her big singles. Including this one, the lead-off track from that album. This is called Nothing Without You.